Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Under pressure following the success of Reform UK in the local elections, Home Secretary Yvette Cooper is announcing new measures to lower net migration, including scrapping the care worker visa. On the BBC, Laura Koonsberg asked Cooper how care companies would find enough staff.
Let's think about, you know, the NHS and the care sector. And the care sector is relied on foreign workers because they just haven't been able to get UK people to do the jobs. The Tories changed the rules, so there's already been a drop-off in the number of visas being given to care workers coming in for abroad. Do you want to cut that still further? Can you see a day even when you say no care workers should come in from abroad?
Yes, we do. And we're going to change those rules this year to prevent the care worker visa being used to recruit from abroad.
So
Yes. But we will allow them to continue to extend visas and also to recruit from. There's more than 10,000 people who came on a care worker visa where the sponsorship visa was cancelled. Effectively, they came to jobs that weren't actually here or that were not of the proper standard. They are here and care companies should be recruiting from that pool of people rather than recruiting from abroad. We are closing recruitment from abroad. That is a significant change, and we're doing it alongside saying we need to bring in a new fair pay agreement for care workers, because we saw that huge increase in care work recruitment from abroad, but without actually ever tackling the problems in the system in the care sector.
But there are already shortages in that sector. I can almost imagine somebody running a care home emailing us right now saying, I can't get staff. Where are they meant to get their staff from?
Well, we want them to recruit. We've got this pool of people who came as care workers. In good faith, they were recruited. But because there were no proper checks in place, because there were no proper standards, what instead happened was people were being exploited, really badly exploited. Those workers are still here. Care companies should be recruiting from those workers. They can also extend existing visas. They could recruit as well from people who are on other visas who are already here. But we do think it's time to end that care worker recruitment from abroad.
On Sky News, Chris Philp told Trevor Phillips that Starmer's US trade deal left the UK worse off than it was at the start of the year.
Your leader says that you would reverse any trade deal that Keir Starmer makes with the EU. You haven't seen the deal, so how do you know you want to trash it?
She has not said she'd reverse any trade deal. She said she would reverse a trade deal that crosses our red lines. That would include if a trade deal with the EU had things like a return to free movement, if it entailed making substantial or indeed any financial contributions, or indeed ceding control over regulation of our domestic economy. Now, if those red lines get crossed, a trade deal would get torn up, but that's not any trade deal. We've got our red lines, we've got our position.
Those are all generalisations. I mean, this is all a bit performative, isn't it? Wouldn't it just be better to wait and see?
Well, it's not performative at all. It's saying, look, there are these really important conditions that, you know, the British public expressed their view via that referendum a few years ago. We don't want to be making financial contributions to the EU. Most free trade deals do not involve making financial contributions from one party to another. Okay. Most free trade deals do not involve ceding sovereignty over how we decide to regulate our economy here in the UK. And it's completely reasonable for Kemi to say those are not lines we think should be crossed.
She grumbled about the deal with the Americans, but is that really right? Because she tried to get a deal with the Americans. I know she did, because she came in here and told us at the time. And you got nothing. Isn't it a bit graceless to complain when this government has actually got an agreement with the White House?
Well, to be clear, what we were trying to negotiate 4 or 5 years ago was a proper comprehensive trade deal. What was agreed last week is not a comprehensive trade deal. It's a very narrow deal, talking mainly about tariffs. Now, while it's welcome...
It's better than nothing, isn't it?
Well, while it's good that the terrible punitive tariffs that have been in place for a few weeks have been eased, as the Governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, said, the level of tariffs that are now being charged on UK exports going into America are higher under this new deal, so-called deal, than they were at the beginning of the year. So after all of Keir Starmer's crawling in the Oval Office and that, you know, sort of obscene obsequiousness we saw with Trump a few months ago. We're actually in a worse place today than we were on January the 1st, and I don't think that is a cause for celebration.
Steady on. Bailey said it was a decent platform, and if we're talking about obscene obsequiousness, your leader couldn't get closer to J.D. Vance. But the point I really want to make here is she said that we had been shafted. Now, is this really grown-up behaviour from the Leader of the Opposition?
Well, look, I think the point that she was making reasonably, and a point that Andrew Bailey, the Governor, did echo, is that the tariffs we are paying today for UK exports into the US, they are higher than they were on the 1st of January.
But they're not higher than anybody else. And competition is what matters here.
Well, they're higher by about a factor of three. There's loads of countries that have got this 10% tariff, loads and loads of countries around the world. So we're no better off than any of them, despite all of Keir Starmer's fawning sycophancy. And we're worse off than we were a few months ago. And for Keir Starmer to claim this is some kind of huge success is obviously absurd.
That's just very interesting. You're using words like obsequiousness and sycophancy. Some people might say you're really cross with him because actually he's doing some of the things that you completely failed to achieve in 14 years.
Not remotely. As I say, our tariffs now are higher than they were a few months ago. And if you look at the economy, OK, you know, we left office with the fastest growing economy in the G7. Inflation, yeah, let me finish the point. Inflation was at the target level. And what did Rachel Reeves do? Having lied during the election campaign, she hit the UK economy with the biggest tax rises in a generation, as a result of which economic growth forecasts have been slashed. Our economy is now stagnating. Unemployment has been going up since the election, and inflation is above target, all thanks to Keir Starmer's appalling budget. That is the real economic story here.
And Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz largely agreed, saying the UK had played into Trump's strategy.
Any agreement with Trump isn't worth the paper it's written on.
Right.
The US signed an agreement with Canada and Mexico during Trump's first administration. One of the first things he did when he became president was to rip it up and impose 25% tariffs against Canada and Mexico. So I wouldn't view it as a great achievement. In fact, I would view it as playing into Trump's strategy. His strategy is divide and conquer, go after the weakest countries, and, you know, sort of put the stronger countries in the back. So who are the strong countries? Well, obviously, China has not reacted in a conciliatory appeasement way. China has responded with high tariffs and made it very clear that U.S. is very dependent on China in so many ways, including rare earths and minerals. So they're beginning now to negotiate, but from a position of strength.
I noticed this week you wrote that if each nation within Europe genuflects at the foot of the emperor, Trump will have the advantage. Do you think that our body language, if I can put it that way, our government body language towards the White House could be described as appeasement?
Yes, I think it is. I think, you know, negotiations, you got something. I don't want to say you walked away empty, but the analyses I've seen, and let me make clear, I haven't done those analyses, and I'm not sure...
We haven't seen the details.
Nobody's seen the full detail. Look like in the way that Trump evaluates things, the U.S. won. But let me make it clear that this whole trade war, the U.S. is losing. We're losing in terms of global respect. We're losing in terms of huge uncertainty, the global markets that are impacting us in a very negative way. We're losing in soft power, in the respect for the United States, who used to uphold the rule of law and no longer does that.
As Reform UK prepare legal challenges against asylum hotels in local areas that they now control, Deputy Leader Richard Tice told GB News that asylum seekers could be housed in smart, organised tents.
What about tents versus hotels? Andrea Jenkins, your now colleague in Greater Lincolnshire.
Well, thank heavens we're asking the question, because actually, if smart, organised tents are suitable for British Army in places like Afghanistan, why aren't they good enough for people who've come here illegally? We should have that debate and that discussion. But Camilla, the smart thing to do...
Smart and civilised tents for refugees. It doesn't quite work, does it? I mean, the reason why tents are smart and civilised when the army is in them is because these are people
because the
who
army
sort of
is structured and disciplined
with hospital corners,
well,
right?
Well, maybe actually...
What refugee camp made of tents has ever looked smart and civilised in your experience?
Well, maybe a bit of discipline and a bit of structure and a bit of fitness, it's good for all of us. So
what are you saying? You're going to put asylum seekers through some kind of military camp?
My real point is that we've got to process people quickly and remove them. If they've come here illegally, they should all be removed. And the other thing, of course, we've got to do is stop them crossing the channel. This year, I suspect we're going to be 45 to 50,000 people.
Yeah.
By the time of the next election, we could be looking at 150,000. Mm. And the British people are raging furious about
this. So your offshore processing is going to be your deterrent?
If you leave the ECHR...
You're reinvigorating Rwanda.
Well, you leave the ECHR and you pick up and take back, which France is legally obliged to stop them leaving their shores, and they're in breach of their international duties.
Camilla Tominey also interviewed Labour MP Joe White, who told her that people have lost hope and no longer listen to the government.
OK, tell me, what do the good people of Bassett Law actually make of Keir Starmer? You are in one of those Labour areas. It was obviously Conservative last time round, Labour before that. You've got the rise of reform. I would imagine that Nigel Farage may be enticing to quite a few people in Bassett Law, Brexit voting community, working class community. What do they actually think of Starmer? Do they think he's the right person to lead the Labour Party? Do you?
I ask of Sir Keir Starmer is to come to Bassett Law and talk to the people of Bassett Law. I want the connection between Westminster and constituencies of the North to be rebuilt. It's completely broken. So policy making and the way we talk about our delivery is going, people don't listen anymore. I think the moment that when we got into government in July, people voted for us with a sense of hope. They voted for Brexit, hoping for change. They voted for Boris Johnson in 2019, hoping for change with the Brexit deal, and that didn't happen. And they voted for us in 2024, hoping that we would bring change. And the moment that the winter fuel payment announcement was made, in my view, that hope was broken, and now they're not listening to the work we're doing. They don't believe us anymore. And I want Keir Starmer and other cabinet members to come out to communities like mine and to talk to the voters about what we want to do and listen to them and listen to priorities. And
when
so
was
that
the last time
it can be rebuilt?
When was the last time Starmer visited Bassett Law?
He came in June 2024.
And how did he go down?
He came to the hospital, he met with the staff there, and I believe that on a one-to-one basis, Keir, he engages, he listens, he is empathetic, and that's what we need. We want that relationship with people in my constituency.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bedell-Brill. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.